Very good day to you all. Welcome back to Marcus Eye on the Liga podcast. I'm Ollie Wilson. Big thanks to Mark Mayo for filling in on hosting duties last week. Did a fantastic job as well. And we are back with a bang this week. Plenty of action to get our teeth into from around La Liga. As always, Barcelona with an impressive 6-0 victory away against Alaves. Doesn't say much really for how competitive the Copa del Rey final might be. Real Madrid keep their noses in front in the La Liga table as well, with a 3-1 victory away at Osasuna, who were very good for the first half an hour or so and tested Los Blancos a fair bit, but the cream will always rise to the top. And in the massive relegation battle, Sporting Gijón with a 2-0 win away against Leganés. And suddenly Leganés getting thrown right back into the mix. And the bottom three not completely cut adrift as they were perhaps a few weeks ago. Welcome to the podcast, brought to you, of course, by Market in English. As I say, I'm Ollie Wilson. Joining me on the show today, two of Market's finest minds that we can find. First and foremost on the show today, Grumpy Scotsman, who dares to shed a fair bit of light on Spanish football. Ewan McTeer joining us. Ewan, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, very good. It's not quite as cold and windy and wet as it has been the past few weeks, so getting slightly less grumpy. By the time we hit the summer, you'll get a happy Scotsman on the other side.
It sounds almost like you're smiling as you say that as well. That's almost unnerving me slightly.
And I'll catch myself before I do.
I do worry about you in the summer as well, mate. You know, I mean, being a Scottish, isn't it like a bit like being ginger in that it's either white or burnt to a crisp in the summer, mate?
Yeah, well, I think everyone who is Scottish has got a little bit of ginger in them anyway, so it is the same thing.
I'm only teasing you, mate. On the line as well, Simon Harrison joining us today on the show as well. Another fine mind from the pages of Marker in English. Simon, how you doing, mate?
Not too bad. Had a few technical difficulties, but at the moment everything is holding out, so hopefully everything will be good to go for the next half an hour or so.
I'm sure it's just a small blip, much like Sevilla's run at the moment, only just getting a 1-0 victory against Las Palmas on the weekend. But I'm sure you'll be fine and dandy, and I'm sure you've got someone like Sampaoli giving you a bit of an ear roll at half-time to make sure that you get the technical operations up and running again, mate.
I mean, I can't promise anything. It's been touch and go, but hopefully, as with Sergio Ramos, I can see it right through to the bitter end.
That's a very good link into where we want to start today, Simon, so I appreciate that. massive game for Real Madrid in terms of keeping their noses ahead, as I say, in the title race. A 3-1 victory away at Osasuna on the weekend. Cristiano Ronaldo, Isco and Lucas Vasquez with the goals. But the real talking point was Sergio Ramos, his 500th appearance for Real Madrid. He's been loving life in the capital since joining from Sevilla those many years ago. 389 La Liga appearances in his career so far. 390, I'm sure, coming up on the weekend. Gents, the big 500 then for Sergio Ramos. And Ewan, as a legacy, is there any chance this is going to be a slightly divided legacy in the opinions of people? Or is he just the new Raul, if you will, at Real Madrid?
I think the only people who take issue with Sergio Ramos or who don't like Sergio Ramos are non-Real Madrid fans, which I think makes him even more of a Real Madrid legend in their eyes. If he can anger almost every other club he plays, then all the better for Real Madrid. I mean, he's scored in two Champions League finals, converted a penalty in the shootout as well last time. There's not much more he could do to cement his legacy as one of the all-time greats. I saw Raul was opening up, I think it was the new La Liga offices in Mexico last weekend, and he was asked to name his top five Real Madrid legends, and he put Di Stefano top, and as you would expect. But number five on that list, he had Sergio Ramos there already. He had him in his top five in terms of Real Madrid legends. I'm sure in the back of his mind he thought he was probably in there. He was just a bit too modest to put himself on the list. But it says a lot that he's already a living legend at Real Madrid, and he's got plenty more football left in him. He's shown this season he can still score goals, he can still defend, and yeah, who knows how many more titles he could win.
Yeah, he's still got at least probably 4 years in him, you would say, at Real Madrid. Sergio Ramos, only 30 years old, although he will be turning 31 in March. Simon, what about the people that say that Ramos actually, as a defender, is quality, perhaps isn't up there with some of the all-time greats? When you think of some of the great defenders throughout world football history, you know, somebody like Franz Beckenbauer, for instance. And some will say that Sergio Ramos, as a defender, because of his discipline record, because of some of the rash challenges that he has put in, perhaps isn't a complete defender, but he does then provide plenty of goals going forward as well.
Well, I think what's quite interesting is obviously his disciplinary record speaks for itself. He can obviously dive in, but I think it's just down to just being that competitor, that being that winner. I think almost you can kind of draw a parallel, not in terms of what they've won in the game or what they've done in the game, but with Raul Garcia, I think a lot of people sort of really disliked Raul Garcia, and Atletico Madrid fans perhaps couldn't understand why. And then he moves club, goes to Athletic Bilbao, and then Diego Simeone finds himself playing against Raul Garcia again, and I'm sure some of the fans were just thinking, like, who is this horrible, horrible player? And it's nothing personal. I'm sure if Sergio Ramos had left Sevilla and joined a different Spanish club or a foreign club, he would still have become this huge figure that's just synonymous with playing just until the end and giving it absolutely everything you've got. And I'm sure that any club who he had spent his career with, he would have become Mr. that club. And it's just Real Madrid have been the lucky team who have managed to get all of this fantastic career out of. And obviously, as Ewan said, some of his goals this season have been really important, and he's contributed more goals than I think Benzema in the league, so take from that what you will as well.
How much of a talisman compared to others down the years do you put him down as, in your personal opinion, guys? Because I'd like to know what you think rather than what others have said perhaps in the press, because Ramos, perhaps he doesn't really divide opinion with, I think, the Real Madrid fans, as you touched on, Ewan. And he is considered pretty much like the leader for the last few years, especially. And he's really taken the mantle of being the club captain. Obviously, he's got so many trophies at club and international level as well, which helps him in terms of his experience and his ability to lead on the pitch. Compared to other Real Madrid leaders, how does he rank for you two?
Yeah, for me, he's definitely up there. I mean, it's interesting that he's such a controversial figure, and in terms of off the field things, he isn't involved in that much controversy off the field. Most of what he does that annoys people is what he does on the field. Sometimes it's not, it gets him sent off, or it's not fully illegal, but most of what he does is allowed within the game of football. So it says a lot that he annoys people just by being good, not so much by... sometimes you hear people say that he's labelled as a cheater or whatever because he scored an offside goal here or there, but he doesn't really do that much to outside of the rules of the game. He just is really good at what he does, and when he does cross the boundary, he often gets himself sent off, which he, I say often, emphasis on the often, but he just does his job on the pitch, and then he'll say whatever he has to say afterwards to back up Real Madrid, promote Real Madrid, say what a leader should say. But in terms of off-the-field controversies, there haven't been that many, really, when you think about it.
Statue-worthy, Simon?
I certainly don't see why not. I mean, like Ewan said, a lot of the stuff that he does, whether you think it's sporting or not, it's the kind of thing where no one would begrudge having maybe a drink with him after the game. I think, apart from the odd Sevilla fan, I'm not sure he'll be going on holiday there and milling around in the shopping centre anytime soon. But aside from that, I think you've got a player where I'm sure that people who played against him, they'd be like, well, obviously he can be quite rash, he can do some underhand things, but I don't think that it's anything out of the ordinary for a team and for other players like himself who just want to win everything, and if they're prepared to bend the rules a little bit, then people can have their opinions on that. But he's the one who's got all of these trophies and medals to look back on at the end of what will probably be quite an extensive career even from now.
Now, this is one, just a quick one to test you both, because we've talked about the discipline record of Sergio Ramos. Can you, either of you tell me, and if you've got it in front of you on a piece of paper, then I'll probably be able to tell, how many times he's been sent off with two yellow cards and how many times he's had straight reds in his career at Real Madrid at club level?
I couldn't even... I know it's the most in history.
Ten of each. It's not a bad shout, actually. That's not a bad shout at all, Simon.
It's got to be something similar. I mean, I think it's the most in Real Madrid history now, I think, Fed League. But I mean, I'll stick with Ewan out of having the two yellow cards thrown in there. I'd say 12 straights and 8 with the two cards.
You're a harsh judge of character, Simon. He's only had 6 straight red cards in his time at Real Madrid, but 15 sending offs in his time. So the overall of 20, and compared to the actual figure of 21, not a bad shout at all. 181 yellow cards in his career.
See, he's just a really loyal Spaniard. He just loves yellow and red so much that put next to his name wherever possible.
If Fernando Amorebieta can get a couple more seasons at Sporting, then maybe he could maybe surpass a league record. But we'll have to see.
It would be something to chase. I'm not sure there are too many players in La Liga trying to chase that record, that's for sure. the record of, in terms of trophies, speaks for itself. 2 European Championships, 1-time World Cup winner, 2 Champions Leagues, 3 Spanish Championships, 2 Copa del Reyes, 2 Spanish Super Cups, 2 UEFA Super Cups, and 2 FIFA Club World Cup winners' medals for Sergio Ramos. What about Real Madrid in general? They, of course, have Champions League football coming up against Napoli. And while they seem to have steadied themselves in the league after the slightly bumpy start, shall we say, to 2017 and the loss to Celta Vigo in the Copa del Rey, it's gone all right the last couple of games. 6 goals in the last 2 outings against Sociedad and against Osasuna. Solid victory in the end against a Osasuna side that really didn't play them off the park in any way, shape or form, but tested them more than you'd have expected to from a side that are bottom of the league. What does this do for the mindset going into the Napoli game this week?
Well, I think it kind of keeps them quite grounded in the fact that they've obviously got Alvaro Morata, who can kind of share his opinions and kind of warn about what Napoli are capable of, having spent some time in Serie A. And I think also it does keep their feet on the ground with the fact that they have got those 2 games in hand and they can't afford to really get ahead of themselves. They need to make sure that they're staying focused because they're going to have this quite congested fixture list, and when that does come around, just the smallest of blips could really set them back quite a lot, especially with how the teams below them aren't really dropping too many points here and there. So I would say that it was good that they kind of did need to kind of scrape the barrel and grind out that result, because they don't want to be lulled into that full sense of security where after the Champions League rolls around and they're straight back into league action, it needs to just be a relentless push, and it needs to get to the point where even when there's these rescheduled games that they've missed, they need to kind of maybe even put themselves in a position where they have a level of comfort in those extra games, as opposed to really be worrying about what happens if they slip up for those 6 points.
Ewan, Real Madrid have got a really tough task against a Napoli attack that in the last couple of games in particular have just gone absolutely ballistic. They put 7 past Bologna a couple of weekends ago. Their last loss in all competitions came back in October away at Juventus, which is really something that you can't begrudge any side. And they managed to score against Juve as well, who are without a doubt the best side in Italian football at the moment. People might underestimate Napoli because Serie A seems to go under the radar now, but there is a real chance of Madrid slipping up. That defence is going to have to be on point against Napoli this coming week.
Yeah, I think we talked about this when the draw was made. At that point, they were in the middle of this run that they're on of not having lost. And we sort of said, you know, let's see how good Napoli are in February, see if they can keep this up. And they've only gone and extended it by about another 10 wins or so. So Real Madrid have to be really worried, and especially I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do this time, not just because Napoli are a better team than I think a lot of people are giving them credit for, but because Real Madrid have to play the first leg of this one at home, and all throughout the Champions League last year and this season before as well, they always had the second leg at home, so they always had that in the back of the mind that if they slip up, they can have one of those special Bernabeu nights where they bring it back, as they did against Wolfsburg. And as they knew they could do if they slipped up away from home. If they do so in this time and lose the first leg at home, as they did, for example, against Celta Vigo in the Cup, then it's not as easy to bring it back when you go away from home in the second leg. It's an often underestimated part of the draw. So the fact they lost the group to Dortmund, it's tough because they've got a tricky team in the shape of Napoli, but it could be especially tough if they don't get a 1 or 2 goal victory in this game and they have to go to Naples and get a result there, because that's something not many teams are doing these days.
Yeah, very much beware Jose Callejon, Mertens, Insigne, and of course Marek Hamsik. Hamsik, who bagged a hat-trick recently as well against Bologna in that 7-1 victory, could be very difficult for Real Madrid. Just quickly then, before the quick break, Morata said that he wants more playing time for Los Blancos. Do you expect him to start against a side that, as you touched on, Simon, he'll know reasonably well, at least, and know the Italian style and how to perhaps better Napoli back four?
Well, I think what's quite important, I suppose, is obviously he does have that experience, and Napoli have had quite a bit of consistency over the last couple of years. I think it's almost been between him and Benzema. It's been Zidane gambling on getting the best out of Benzema and then balancing that with making sure that Morata does get enough first team minutes. Morata has scored a similar amount of goals in the league. He's got a good attitude, he always works hard. And I do think it's got to get to a point really where Benzema has just to sit on the bench and work to kind of retake his place in the team, because he has these odd games where he can just pop up with an important goal. But on the whole, I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo is a bit guilty of this too. On the whole, he's not really contributing too much. And I think it can be a shame when Zidane uses a 3-5-2. It's a formation which Morata would have played a lot in at Juventus in the last couple of seasons. And I think it's the perfect chance for him to get more games. And I don't see anything wrong with him speaking out and asking for it, because he can't just stagnate for the rest of the season. And I don't see why they can't give him a chance in the Champions League. It just depends whether Zidane trusts him enough, as Ewan said, to go into a game, go into a tie, sorry, where they don't have the Bernabeu to fall back on, and they don't necessarily have a second leg where they can kind of cruise and coast to a result after doing really well in the first leg.
It's interesting you say Morata, great attitude, hard worker, but also now starting to have a little bit of a moan about his frustration at the lack of playing time, which is never the sign of somebody who's got a good attitude. But we'll leave it there with Real Madrid just for the moment. We're going to take a quick break here on Eye on La Liga. When we come back, we'll be looking a little bit at Barcelona's 6-0 victory over Alaves, but frustration and upset for Alex Vidal and the big injury coming your way after the break here on the podcast. Joining me today to go through all of the stories from around La Liga. And let's talk about Alex Vidal, a man who a couple of months ago we were saying was probably never going to feature in a Barcelona shirt ever again, was given some opportunities in the Copa del Rey, exceeded expectations, and of course got himself back in Luis Enrique's sights, started to get a bit of game time, of course, with Sergio Roberto struggling in terms of his fitness at right back for Barcelona. And just as he looked like he was starting to make his way perhaps into first team contention on a regular basis, suddenly picks up this 5-month injury that rules him out for the rest of the season. Is this going to hinder Barcelona too much for the remainder of the campaign, Ewan, just having that support and that backup at the right-back position where, to be honest, Barcelona has struggled for a while now?
Yeah, it really could do, especially in the cup final where Sergio Roberto's suspended. But when he's there, he's done well, and Vidal was absent. He was AWOL for the first half of the season, and they coped not too badly. The problem is that, yeah, like you say, if Sergio Roberto gets injured, if he has to move further up the pitch or move position at all, then they're really struggling to fill that spot. And you can see, I don't know, Jeremy Mathieu try his best at right back, which I don't think will fill many Barcelona fans with much confidence. So they really do have to find a replacement, and they have this opportunity where they can go out to the transfer market, and as long as they sign a La Liga player, I think it is, then they could pick someone up, but that's going to be hard. I mean, no one really wants to let a player go when you don't have a chance to replace him for yourself. So I think it could be a lot more serious than if you'd said to us a month ago that a 5-month injury to Alex Vidal would potentially derail Barcelona's season. You'd have chuckled, exactly. So I think it could be quite significant, but they'll be praying now that Sergio Roberto can stay fit and can hold down that right back spot until the end of the season.
Frustration as well in that Mascherano, who has sometimes slipped across to that right back position, I think he did in the Copa del Rey against Atletico Madrid in that second leg, suffering a hamstring injury as well, which just leaves him even more downtown at the back for Barcelona at the moment. In terms of going forward, though, would you have not thought that perhaps either Jordi Alba or Lucas Digne could, as fullbacks? I mean, I don't know if I'm just so far removed from playing professional football that I can't comprehend this. But as a left back, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're playing right full back, it's the same job, just switch to the other side. Can't Lucas Digne or as I say, Jordi Alba kind of fill in? Should they have any problems at right back position?
Well, I mean, I would say personally, it's down to the style of the team you play against, obviously, because it could sort of play into, say, if Digne played at right back and they're sort of playing against a team where their wide players like to kind of cut inside and they like to cause problems by getting onto perhaps their stronger foot, but they're just playing on a different wing. So, for example, I don't know, if they played Valencia and you've got Nani who likes to drift in from the left, I mean, that could play into Digne's hands, for example, because he's obviously tackling with his stronger foot. But a lot of teams in La Liga do have like wing-backs or full-backs who do like to get forward. And if you've always got someone looking for the overlap and you've always got someone looking to go on the outside of a fullback, I think it could easily lead to Digne becoming the new Alex Vidal in terms of being kind of shunned. And at this point, I think it would be quite unfair to expect him to perform anywhere near the level that he knows he could do at left back. But I don't think it will get bad enough for Douglas to be somehow recalled. But I think their best hope, to be honest, would be someone like Mascherano getting back fit as soon as possible and playing at right back. Outside of that, if I had to really pull someone out of my the back of my mind who's not a defender, maybe Rakitic could put a shift in. But aside from that, I really would be struggling to come up with another alternative to Mascherano.
You could also put Messi in there as a sort of false number two and just unleash him from even further back on the right wing and see how that goes.
Jeez, the thought of Messi overlapping with, say, Neymar on the right flank or something like that, that could be horrific for any defence that has to deal with it, although I imagine you'd have plenty of space in behind suddenly. I can't see Messi being too disciplined staying back, although to his credit, he's obviously a hard worker off the ball. I suppose Luis Enrique needs this sort of injury problem like he needs a hole in the head, really, but Barca, in terms of the title race, just continue to laying down big, big scores. A 6-0 victory on the weekend against Alaves, who they'll, of course, play in the Copa del Rey final. It doesn't show much, as I said earlier, for the final itself in terms of a competitive game, that's for sure. But Barca have just got into rhythm in 2017 after, again, a little blip at the start with the loss against Bilbao and the draw against Villarreal. But since then, goals abundance for him, for Barca. Do you think they're trying to make a statement every time they go out to keep the pressure on Madrid?
I think they don't really have any option but to try and do that. I mean, in terms of the result against Alaves, I think it kind of did a disservice to Alaves. They had a sort of spell in the second half where it all just completely fell apart. And I think what needs to kind of be remembered is that the team that was put out against Barca wasn't necessarily who Pellegrino would consider to be his best team for the Copa del Rey. I mean, you had like Kostacic come in, Torres was available, Santos, Katai. A lot of these players didn't sort of figure in the semi-final, which they managed to wriggle through against Celta Vigo. But I would say for Enrique, given the position that Real Madrid find themselves in with these two games in hand, all that they can do is kind of ignore Real Madrid being there, keep picking up the points and just hope that somewhere in their congested fixture list, Real Madrid slip up somewhere. And it's not out of the question. It's not looking likely at the moment. But at the end of the day, all they can do is the best that they can possibly do. And I think with Vidal and with Alcacer grabbing a goal finally, I think it has shown that Enrique's approach with rotating, he can get the results and he can also have that sort of balance and squad harmony. So I think Barca are quite well set up heading into the second half of the season, and the ball really is just in Real Madrid's court in terms of whether they can keep up this relentless push.
It's interesting you say it doesn't do Alaves justice, a 6-0 defeat. I mean, you're hard pushed to kind of defend that one. I know they conceded four in about 12 minutes or so, but I find that one a difficult one to defend slightly. In terms of Vidal's future at Barcelona, how does this injury, do you think, just finally before we move away from Barca, affect him going forward? Will they still look to kind of turf him out, do you think, in the summer? Do you think Luis Enrique will say, well, at least, you know, he's come in and he's still done a very good job for us when we've given him the opportunity, it's worth keeping him around for another season or two?
Well, I think he can definitely contribute while he's injured. He can kind of contribute in the fact that he seems to be a likeable guy that the rest of the squad get on with. There seems to be that togetherness there. I mean, he's even been their jester at times with these goals that have apparently been funny. But Enrique has, well, supposedly they've sort of got Nelson Semedo from Benfica on their radar, who's a right back. So that could be a potential player that would look to come in and maybe improve on that position. But I do think that what he's shown in the last few weeks, he's shown that he can contribute something to Barcelona. It just depends whether they're going to be looking to kind of just strengthen ahead of him. But as a squad player, I don't think he can do any more than what he's already been asked. I mean, he wasn't given a chance. As soon as he was given some games and minutes, he proved everyone wrong. So I think it would be harsh to not see him again in a Barcelona shirt, to like personally.
And they take on Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League, Ewan, coming up on Valentine's Day, of course. Could be a Valentine's Day massacre. PSG haven't exactly set the world alight in terms of the Ligue 1 title race. They seem to save themselves a little bit in European football. It's a tie that we've seen time and time again in the last few years in the Champions League. No Ibrahimovic to deal with and contend with, but Cavani, 25 goals in 23 games. And they brought in Julian Draxler as well, PSG. It's a strong side still, the Parisians, despite perhaps the a little more flat-footed at times under Unai Emery. But Emery will know how to take on a Barca side as well, of course.
Yeah, it's a nice little date that, to propose a romantic trip to Paris when the football's on. But yeah, Ibrahimovic
is... know what your girlfriend's getting, don't we?
Exactly. Ibrahimovic has moved out the way and it's sort of opened up and freed up Edinson Cavani with, yeah, his 31 goals this season and he seems to be firing away. So he's on form. The problem is, you mentioned him. You mentioned Unai Emery, and the problem is he knows how to play Barcelona, but he's never really had much success. And in his games against Barcelona, he's lost 16 of them and drawn 6 of them, and only won once. And that's with 4 different clubs that he's taken them on. So he'll be taking them on with a 5th club this time. And yeah, it really remains to be seen if he'll. I mean, PSG is arguably the best team he's ever faced him with, although his Sevilla sides were pretty good. It seems that Barcelona have this hold over PSG in the last few years. It seems that they have this hold over Unai Emery as well. Everything points to Barcelona easing through this tie as well. But yeah, Cavani is this sort of wild card who's in the form of his life.
He's looking unstoppable in front of goal at the moment. Clinical finishing all around from the Uruguayan. PSG taking on Real Madrid in the Champions League coming up this Tuesday. The first leg, of course, as Ewan says, in Paris. Let's take another quick break on the show. Let's move away from the big two in Spanish football and focus elsewhere around the league. When we come back, we'll have a look at a big win for Sporting Gijón and San Pauli, not worried by Sevilla's little dip. All that and more coming on Eye on the Liga. Twitter at Marker in English, at Marker in English, and of course get on the website www.marker.com/en to hear from my two guests on the show today, both Ewan McTeer and Simon Harrison, big time journalists, big time writers on Marker in English. Let's take a look at elsewhere around the league. We've covered the big two, of course, in the opening two parts of the show. Let's have a look at the bottom four. I was about to say bottom three because that's really all we've been talking about, but let's have a look at the bottom four in La Liga. Huge win for Sporting Gijón over Leganés, just dragging Leganés back into the relegation battle. And it's a big win for everybody else down there at the foot of the table, the likes of Osasuna, because it just gives everybody a chance and a hope that they can perhaps see Leganés fall, drop into this battle completely, perhaps drop into the relegation zone. But would you say at the moment Gijón look the most likely to pull themselves out of it, considering current form, or have Osasuna impressed you enough? Because for me, I've really enjoyed watching Osasuna since the turn of the year, but they just haven't had the results that to go their way, really.
I think Osasuna have definitely improved a lot since they brought in Vasilijevic. There seems to be a bit of a cohesion on the pitch. Sergio Leon is really showing what he can do. But you do just wonder whether the gap is slightly too big for them to pick up the amount of points which they need to kind of clamber out of it. I was very surprised actually to see Leganés fall apart against Sporting. Obviously Leganés are winless in 10, but Sporting just can't seem to defend. So for them to keep a clean sheet, and also for Amore Bieta to not need to give a yellow card away, I mean, it's just absolutely bizarre, to be honest. But in terms of Leganés, I think they've probably bought the best out of the bottom four in January, but it does remain to be seen whether they can kind of gel those players together, and whether Alberto Bueno can kick on, find a goal. And I think with Leganés, maybe if they pick up just one win, they're crying out for a win. And then if they can get all these new signings on song and get that dressing room atmosphere right, I think they could pull away. And then you're looking at maybe Deportivo being the team who are really struggling. But it's incredibly hard to choose. I don't think that Granada are going to do much between now and the end of the season. But the other three in that bottom four, and even Deportivo, as I've said, any of them could be looking at going down. I mean, the performance levels have been contrasting. They've picked up results that you wouldn't expect. And personally, from my own personal standpoint, I think that Osasuna deserve to be much better off than they currently are. But obviously it's a results business, and they've not managed to pick up those wins as of yet.
Now, Ewan, you're the man to talk to about the Monday night game in La Liga. Of course, we're recording this on Monday afternoon, so I apologise if this is slightly dated, of course, but Eibar taking on Granada. Granada can move level with Sporting on 16 points if they get a win away at an Eibar side that are up in 8th at the moment. Ewan, I mean, you're the man to give us the breakdown, as you are so knowledgeable on this Eibar side, on whether they are actually going to have an upset against them and Granada be able to pick up 3 points.
No, I don't think so. of course, I've just completely jinxed Eibar there, but you look at everything, Eibar have one of the best home records in the league, and Osasuna, Granada even haven't won it away from home yet. They did win last weekend, but yeah, everything really just points to an Eibar win, and Eibar won this fixture 5-1 last year, and Granada have really struggled in their previous trips up there, so I don't think this is the kind of match where they can hope to get anything from. But Granada did show some positive signs in the last couple of weeks. They switched to a five-man defence, and it seems to have worked a little bit. And you just wonder if they always seem to find a way out. They're sort of like the Spanish Sunderland. They always manage to, at the end of the season, pull themselves out of some ridiculous situation they've got themselves in. And for that reason, and the fact that they are even ahead of Osasuna in the table, I think they really have to be considered for, you know, another great escape. But they've done it in the past, just building a few home wins together, and yeah, any of those three could realistically, we're all talking about how those three could all pull themselves out of danger, where I think just a couple of weeks ago we'd written them all off. But Leganés and Deportivo, they're sort of both tailspinning in a way that makes you think anything's possible now.
And suddenly again you just see Valencia, the wheels coming off after the impact of Voro initially, but without a win in their last three, conceded 7 in those 3 games as well, and they're only a point above Depor, and you could see Valencia just sliding back into the heart of that relegation battle as well. And considering the club that they are over the last few years, you wouldn't put it past them doing that.
Well, I mean, another team I think as well that you have to add into, like, kind of factor into that, is the fact that Malaga are just in that similar sort of tailspin. They are very, very lucky that in the early parts of the season that they managed to sort of build up a nice sort of reserve of points, and over the winter, I think they're kind of, their last acorns are sort of trickling away from them. But with Valencia, I think maybe, I don't know what, with Voro, he must be wondering why he's taken this job, because he said himself that he was not entirely sure, and it seems that maybe it's sort of, with the weeks that go by, and you kind of realise that yes, Voro, he has had in the past this sort of short-term little kickstart of form, but as the weeks go by, it's kind of hard for you to paper over just the cracks in their squad and performances and mentality. Like, Voro can't do all of that on a long-term basis, and his own reputation could start to maybe dwindle a little bit as a result. I do think on paper, I mean, you look at their squad and compared to maybe the bottom five or six, you're wondering how they're down there. But it's obviously not for technical reasons. So it really is hard to call. I'd say Malaga are very, very lucky to have got up a couple of wins early on in the season, because if they hadn't have managed to do that under Juan de Ramos, then I think Romero would be probably one of the managers you'd be looking at to get sacked next.
I like that, as Malaga are the kind of the squirrels of Spanish football, storing all their acorns of points early and then starting to fall away over the winter period. So, gents, let's finally look at a bit of Sevilla. It's not been that impressive from Sampaoli's side. Only the 1-0 win on the weekend against Las Palmas. I'm not saying that the wheels have fallen off in any way, shape or form. Still only 2 points off Barcelona in second place. But do you think it's a side that's perhaps just running out of steam? Tiredness is starting to kick in slightly because of the style that they play. And it's a completely different style and a far more energetic style to the one that Unai Emery used, of course, in his seasons in Seville. And it's almost like a bit of a shock to the system now, in that everybody suddenly seems a little drained and a little tired when they're used to having a little bit more in the tank, perhaps, at this stage in the season.
I mean, I was just going to say that obviously a lot's been made of what energy reserves and how depleted those might be for Sevilla, but it's not exactly that they are in some kind of crisis mode that maybe Bielsa would have been considered to have in the past in Spain. I think the fact that they can look to their bench and they can see the goals that have been contributed from their substitutes, that maybe Sampaoli might be okay with the fact that his first choice 11 can kind of grind these games down to the last half an hour or 20 minutes where they've got a chance of taking the 3 points, and he knows he can call on the likes of Sarabia and now Correa, I suppose. He can kind of call on some of these players to make the difference when it really does matter.
Yeah, I think with this win, I mean, the performance wasn't as great as it has been in the past. In the past few weeks now, they haven't really looked like themselves. But to win away at Las Palmas, I think was a bit of a statement win ahead of the second half of the season, because no one had won away at Las Palmas yet. Real Madrid had even drawn there, so for Sevilla to pick up an away win, and this is a team that didn't win away from home at all last season, for them to pick up an away win there in Las Palmas ahead of, you know, the business end of the season, sort of, I think, will have reassured a lot of players that they really can kick on, because this was almost a perfect weekend for them. They had a tricky game away at Las Palmas. Atletico Madrid were at home to Celta Vigo, and it really seemed that maybe Atletico could claw back some points in the race for third, and Sevilla picked up this really tricky 3-point haul, and Atletico almost lost their match as well. So it could have been the perfect weekend for Sevilla, when it was probably one where you thought Atletico would make up some ground.
They still have that 4-point advantage over Atletico Madrid, and you're right in that Atletico almost dropped all the points against Celta Vigo this weekend. An unbelievable game to finish off a weekend of Spanish football. I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't able to watch this game as it went out live, but I was watching the goals come through on my little ticker on my phone and you saw Guidetti scores for Celta Vigo and you think, that's it, okay, it's done, you know, 2-1, 78th minute, Atleti, despite kind of this revival that Simeone reckons his side is going to have in this second half of the season, despite Fernando Torres getting on the score sheet once again, he missed a penalty and you just thought perhaps Atleti have killed themselves off, and then in the space of 2 minutes Carrasco pops up and then Griezmann as well. Unbelievable. The never-say-die attitude for Atletico Madrid is going to be huge, do you feel, Ewan, in going into this latter part of the season? Because if they're going to fight now for the Champions League, because that's really the silverware that they can fight for this season, they're going to fight for this Champions League European Cup trophy. They have to have that never-say-die attitude, and they need these sorts of results to kind of prove that they can pull themselves back from the brink.
Yeah, I mean, this was a lot of fun. A tricky one to keep your eye on and see exactly what was going on, but it was a lot of fun. And yeah, Diego Simeone, once the winner went in, was sprinting down the sidelines celebrating as if they had won some silverware, and it was just a league game against Celta Vigo that they were expected to win anyway, but it just showed you how again it was a sort of a statement win for Atletico ahead of this sort of final push and the return of the Champions League. It could have been a the worst week of the season if they'd been knocked out of the cup and then lost to Celta Vigo at home as well. But they've managed to save, you know, keep that race for third alive. And yeah, now they go into the Champions League, and that's where they'll look to find some success. And Simeone was quite interesting, I thought, at the end of the cup game last week when he said we can have more success in Europe because, and he was pointing to the fact that domestic referees seem to have it in for Atletico. And it's an interesting point because they have had more success in Europe than they have domestically over the past couple of seasons. And it might not necessarily be that there's refereeing bias going on in Spain, but it might just be the way of officiating suits Atletico a little bit more. Where in Spain, you know, their kind of more aggressive style gets blown for fouls more often, whereas in Europe things tend to get, you know, they're a bit more lenient from some of the referees there. So Europe, they seem to have this fantastic run in Europe, having won two Europa Leagues in the past few years and reaching two Champions League finals. And as poor as they've been this season, you wouldn't want to rule them out, especially when they're playing Bayer Leverkusen, which is a very winnable tie. If they put themselves into the quarterfinals, then who knows how far they could go.
Yeah, I could just see it being another heartbreak again, though. It's just a side that had too much of that in European football in the last few years with the losses to Real Madrid. Do you ever think that that, as a final one to finish off the podcast today, guys, do you ever think that that's the kind of just nagging irritant in the back of the head right now, the fact that they have blown chances at big times in both the league and Champions League in the last few years to pick up more silverware, to add to the trophy tally, and they still have almost that inferiority complex compared to some of the bigger sides around Europe because of those disappointments?
I mean, it's obviously not nice. It makes them, I guess, like you said, the inferiority complex, it makes them feel perhaps vulnerable to an extent. But I mean, it's a new season, it's different players. I mean, you've got different players looking to put their brand on these big games. I think if they manage to get to the final of the Champions League, if this season hasn't got Fernando Torres scoring a Champions League winner written all over it on maybe his last game for Atletico, then I don't know what other scripts that people want to be writing, but that's certainly the one that I would want to see play out. But yeah, I mean, it's very much, I think Simeone will be aware of this, and I think with some of the additions that he's made, I think the squad's a bit stronger than in the past, so they have got some options to dip into on the bench if they get into these sort of like the dying stages of really important matches. But if Fernando Torres can score an overhead kick from the edge of the box, then then I think Simeone thinks that there are some things that are out of his control that are in a good way too. So
yeah, well, let's see if Torres comes up with that Champions League winner. Then let's put a load of money on Aguero then re-signing for Atletico Madrid as Torres goes out the door and Aguero comes in. It's just going to be history repeating itself, really, isn't it, for Atletico Madrid with their strikers. And I imagine soon we might be seeing Diego Costa back there as well at some point, perhaps Falcao as well. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I really appreciate the time, as always, that you give to the podcast. Guys, thanks a lot, Ewan, mate. Always a pleasure. Never a chore to speak to you, despite my relentless ribbing of your north of the border nature.
Always a pleasure.
Cheers, and thanks a lot, Simon, mate. Appreciate you overcoming the technical difficulties today.
Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
All right, guys, let's leave it there for another week or so. We have Champions League football, as I say, coming up with, of course, Barcelona going to Paris to take on Paris Saint-Germain on Valentine's Day on Tuesday night, and then Real Madrid host Napoli on Wednesday. Atleti and Sevilla have a little bit of time left before they start their European exploits once again. We'll be back in the next week or so with more of a roundup of the action and the talking points from around La Liga. If you can't wait until then, get on to www.marca.com/en, www.marca.com/en, to catch up with Ewan, Simon, Jason, everybody else from the show who writes such wonderful articles for the website. Get on to Twitter @MarcaInEnglish, @MarcaInEnglish, all one word, all lowercase. And of course, like and review the podcast via Audio Boom or iTunes. Just search Eye on the Liga. And of course, Marca in English on Facebook as well. We'll be back in a very short time indeed. There'll be plenty of action to discuss. Who will triumph in Europe in the first legs? Find out in a few days' time. Have a good one.